Welcome to minute 107 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Joe Amedee, the CEO of Virtual Film Entertainment. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Howdy. Good to be back again. Good to be talking about this movie.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I didn't ask you yesterday, and I asked this of everyone, I guess, is what's your history with this movie? Do you remember when you first saw it? Do you remember, how many times you've seen it? Yeah, whatever you can recall about your history with the movie.
It's interesting because I remember everything about seeing this movie for the first time. And when I think back, it kind of goes along with all of the other Spielberg films, because Spielberg films, beginning with Jaws, became, I don't want to say event cinema, but they were so big that you knew so much about those films before you saw them that the excitement had built up so much that it was almost impossible for him to deliver. But then almost every single film he delivers. That's the genius of Steven Spielberg. With this film in particular, it's all about the first 25 minutes. Or how long is
it's 27 and a half minutes until they reach the point where we're seeing the women typing.
Yeah. So leading up to the film's release, whoever handled the marketing campaign did an incredible job, because the entire country was waiting to see this movie. And all anybody talked about was those first 27 minutes, because we were told ahead of time that it was going to be disturbing. It was going to be scenes of brutality that we've never seen before on a screen, that, the storming of Omaha Beach has been depicted in many movies before this, in particular The Longest Day, which to that point was considered the film about the D-Day invasion. And that film pales compared to, pales compared to most war films made after it. But, that was your frame of reference. And so before that scene starts, even as you're going to the theater, you're nervous. Everybody was nervous because they didn't know if they were going to get through. Would they turn their head? Would they get sick? Would they, how brutal was it going to be? And it was as brutal as anyone expected, if not more so, because the realism of those first 27 minutes still haunts me to this day. His genius, Spielberg's genius, is that he was able to follow those 27 minutes with a film that is as good as those 27 minutes. The film does not take a dip and go down from that point forward, at least for me anyway. But yeah, I remember driving in the car. I remember going into the theater. I was with my wife. I don't think I was with my kids. They're probably too young. No, they might have, 1998. No, so it delivered. But yeah, it was nervous going into this film because it was the unexpected. And the fact that you were told that you were about to see something that you had never seen before in a major studio-driven, a major film with major stars made by the, most prolific director of our time at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, it was big. It was real big. And that's all we talked about. I mean, those first 27 minutes. Because it was brutal. I mean, and it was a brutal invasion, and it was a suicide invasion. Everybody that got off those boats knew that, chances are they weren't going to make it to the beach, and the film depicts it.
Yeah. Seriously, it's brutal, but it's I always remember that. They had so many interviews with veterans of DJ, and a lot of the men said, this brought me so much back to that exact moment because it felt so realistic and so much like what I went through when I was there. You know, the one that always jumps out at me is James Doohan, you know, from Star Trek, Scotty,
yeah,
who lost a finger in on D-Day, and apparently I've seen all of the Star Trek thing, and I never noticed that he was missing a finger.
Yeah,
they were able to cover that really well.
Yeah. Harold Lloyd.
Yeah, but he did that to himself. He did that to himself when he was playing around with dynamite. You know.
Well, but they covered it up pretty good. But you know, the thing about the D-Day invasion is, again, it has been depicted in other films before this, but it was kind of like, I don't want to say old school Hollywood, where, you know, it was crazy. But it was, you know, whether it be Robert Mitchum, or I'm trying to think of the other stars of the Longest Day that got off the boat that were in those scenes.
Henry Fonda.
But nothing. Yeah, Fonda was one. Yeah, but nobody ever depicted the chaos.
Right.
And it was chaos. That's what it was. There was no, you know, once you got off the boat, everybody was on their own to, you know, at least for the first, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. And from what I remember the most is from the time that boat opens. I mean, instantaneously, the chaos begins.
Correct.
Bullets are flying everywhere. It's you know, it's crazy. It's a crazy 27 minutes, but it's also one of the best 27 minutes in the history of film. I mean, it's really incredible.
The second question I wanted to ask you is, so how many times do you think you've seen this movie? How often? Like, how often do you go back to the well?
You know, as they say? I saw it, you know, 3 or 4 times, probably within the first 10 years of its release. You know, you see it in the theaters. I think I saw it in the theaters twice. And then when it hits DVD, you throw the DVD in for the first time and you watch it. Nowadays, it's on a lot on cable. So if you're flicking, there it is. But the film is so brutal. The second half is as brutal as the first by the time you get to the end. And it's hard to watch, as opposed to, you know, some of the other films that a lot of us, as we're flicking through our remote, we see Shawshank and we want to watch it, or we see The Great Escape and we want to watch it. You know, even though The Great Escape kind of has the same type of second half as Saving Private Ryan, they're easier to watch. Ryan is a tough watch. Ryan is a tough watch because you know everything that's going to happen. Ryan, for me anyway, personally, is a film that, I'll be 100% honest, you inviting me to do this and me doing this, I do want to find a way to see this on the screen. Every once in a while, it'll pop up at one of the repertory houses around me. I wouldn't mind seeing this in theaters again from beginning to end.
Right. I've told this story a few times over this season, but after it came out in the theater, so I saw it once in the theater, and then a few weeks later, a very good friend of mine said, "Hey, let's go see it again," you know. And I said, "Oh, come on! I already saw it in the theater. Why do I need to go see it again?" And he says, "Look, this is a movie that you're probably never going to get a chance to watch again in the theater. You should definitely do that." And so I went back and we saw it a second time. Now, I recently asked this friend about, you know, and thanking him, you know, now that I'm doing this, you know, this podcast, I thanked him for it. And he's like, "I don't even remember telling you that. I don't even remember going to see it with you."
The wow. Yeah. I bump into, I have really good friends that I have shared movie experiences with. And I say to them, "Hey, remember when we went and saw such and such?" And they're like, "Nah, I don't remember it." And I'm like, well, it just didn't mean to you what it meant to me. Yeah.
Correct.
That has nothing to do. Correct.
Again, you and I are more are not normal movie guys. Exactly. I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see
which I'm proud of that. Oh my.
If I can get rich.
But the truth is, I have not seen it again in the theater, and I would love to see it in the theater if I get that opportunity. You know, but in my neck of the woods, I don't get the opportunities as often as you probably do in America.
I would imagine yes.
In the last, I think, 3 years, I was able to see Titanic again in the theater and Jaws, which are both great to see again in the theater. No question.
So again, off subject, if you wanted to go to the movies now, how close do you live to a theater? Is it a multiplex like here?
Yeah, and sure. Yeah, there's two multiplexes within 15, 20 minutes.
Are they showing the same films that we're showing?
Yeah, of course. And many times the movies even come out here earlier because movies come out here on Thursdays instead of on Fridays.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes I get to see the big blockbusters, a few hours before people get to see them.
They're actually starting to do that. But they only, if it's a big, big film, if it's Captain America last week, they'll have multiple showings on Thursday night. But if it's a smaller film, they'll show one showing on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And that's usually when Ginger and I, my wife, will go see it because we don't want to deal with the crowds on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense also. Yeah. There are movies that for me, most big movies that come out, I go see them, first showing on Thursday. Yeah. Again, because I don't want the big crowds for that one reason, and also, because I'd like to be able to see it as soon as possible.
Me too.
Whenever the Star Wars movies came out, I always went. I remember seeing Rogue One at like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday. And it didn't come out till like the following day in America.
That's fantastic. When you can pull something like that off, man, it's such a good feeling. It's such a good feeling. You know? Are there a lot of locally made films made from Israel, filmmakers?
There are. I prefer them less because they're usually lower budget, and the stories aren't as powerful as U.S. filmmaking. But every so often I come across some really great ones. The advantage of being bilingual is that I can see a movie that's in Hebrew and it doesn't bother me. I don't need the subtitles. I'm not a fan of foreign movies. I don't like having to read the subtitles. I like using the subtitles as a crutch when I'm listening to when I'm watching something in English. That subtitles always helps because sometimes you miss a word here or there. So watching it with subtitles is always great. But reading a movie is not my my cup of tea, I guess you can say.
So I'm starting I'm actually starting it next week, a film club at a local movie theater where I'm going to show a movie every month and then have a guest speaker come and join me for a Q&A afterwards. And you would not go to the first film because it's Cinema Paradiso and it's subtitled.
Well, first of all, I love Cinema Paradiso.
I knew you would say that. That's why I threw that out there.
That's first of all. And that's one of the movies that I can only watch the extended version of.
Really?
Yes.
See, I like it.
I love extended versions of movies. The director's cuts and all those things are just, because as a movie lover, I want to see as much as possible of what the director wants to tell us. Not necessarily what the studio wants to show us. No knock to a producer of a film studio.
I love both versions. I chose to show the original. Well, we had to show the original version because we have a time. I have a time slot I have to commit to, and the longer version would have excluded having a Q&A afterwards. And the Q&A is the whole purpose of the film club. But I do love the original version with the ending. That the long version doesn't bring you to the emotional pit that the first released version does.
Okay, well, I'm going to disagree with you on that because I think that the original release, because it cuts things out, it's not as powerful. But again, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I think maybe we picked your next movie. Why...
No, you definitely didn't. as much as I love Cinema Paradiso and the fact that it's a love letter to people who love movies, no.
Well, I felt that it was the best film to start a film club with. And then the second month is Harold and Maude.
Okay, another great movie.
And then the third month is I got to go with my love of Chaplin. I'm going to show City Lights, and then show.
Where's The Great Escape?
Huh?
I'm waiting for you to do The Great Escape and invite me and fly me in, and I'll come and talk about it.
I will. Okay, I will. Sounds good.
All right, let's actually talk a little bit about Saving Private Ryan.
You got it, pal.
Not that I don't enjoy talking about all this other stuff. So minute 107 begins with everyone going back into town, Rommel, and ends with Miller confirming the information that he's got. So yesterday we ended things with the men all being shocked that they came across this guy named James Francis Ryan. And they don't know how this miraculously happened to them, but somehow it did.
Yes, it did. So, power of movies.
Yeah.
All of Europe, and you have to pick that one field where they're at.
That's right. Well, they were on their way to Rommel, so it sort of, you know, makes it a little bit more plausible, you know, from that perspective. I give them a little bit for that one.
Yeah.
You know. So the this minute begins. We get like a fraction of a second of the men still in that photo shoot, you know, that we talked about yesterday at the end of the minute.
Yep.
And then we see the ruins of Rommel. And Miller is walking, talking with Henderson, and he goes, "Look like you guys got hit pretty hard." He goes, "Yes, sir. Small unit action. They came in and beat the hell out of us with 88s. Tell you what, sir. If you are a relief, I'm going to file a complaint. Because I wouldn't blame you."
You know, it's what impressed me the most when I zeroed in on this minute was the set design, was the way this town looked. It just looks so real. You have to forgive me. Where did they film this?
You always ask me those things, and I don't know. I never go into the history of where they filmed.
Yeah, me neither. But it just looks so
and stuff like that. I know they filmed most of the movie in England and possibly in France. So it could be that this was in Normandy somewhere. But again, they must have spent a lot of time building up all this rubble.
So it's you're thinking the same way that I'm thinking. It's because it just looks so real. It just looks so good. It looked like it had recently been bombed to hell.
That's right.
And
they have little fires, they have little fires along the way, you know, as they're walking and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, in this minute, it's not much happens storyline-wise. It's only a minute, but you're seeing the visuals that you're seeing take over this minute more so than the almost more so than the dialogue, which happens more towards the end of the minute than it does as you're – and I think that's on purpose. As the camera is following them through this rubble of what once was a town.
That's right. And they do a great job with the walk and talk, because you have, you know, Miller is walking with Henderson. They're having this little conversation. But as you said, we're not paying 100% attention to what they're saying. We're looking at everything around them.
Yeah.
And the movie's using this for the future to be able to tell us, oh, well, you know, this is where they're going to be defending. And now you can understand the geography a little better.
Yeah.
You know, and then they bring us to an area where there's a group of men all sitting around. So we get to see some of the men that we're going to be seeing over the next hour of this movie. And right here, I was able to count 10. Okay. You know, as I continue with this, you know, with the next hour of this movie, I'm going to start counting the men, you know. Unfortunately, the only way to count the men is by how many die, you know, because most of these are no names. We you know, we'll never know who they are.
Right.
It might even be difficult to figure out who the actor is for some of them. But, you know, there's got to be more than 10 of them here.
Well, there's 10 on screen up until the end of this minute. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, no, I'm talking men in general that are defending the defenders of Rommel.
Yeah.
You know, my assumption is that there's more than 10 of them that are here. And they're all just going around their business, but they're still paying attention to the conversation between Henderson and Miller. And then Miller asks him, "Well, who's your CO?" And Henderson says, "It would have been Captain Jennings, sir. I'm afraid the best we can muster up right now is a corporal." So. Yeah. This is like a roundabout way of it. It's very strange that he would say it that way, that it would have been Captain Jennings, you know, because he's basically saying, well, you know, we had this captain that apparently was killed and he's no longer around. You know, that's what he's saying. So, but that means there's no sergeants, no one else. And, you know, he's implying that they got the hell beat out of them here, you know?
Well, he's implying that they got the hell beat out of him. And, but that, you know, first you can see it visually. And then, I think Miller says something in the very beginning of the minute or somewhere along the minute that looks like you got something to hell beat out of you or something like that.
Yeah, no, because it looks like you guys got hit pretty hard. But again, this is really. We don't know when Ramel got hit. Ramel could, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, when we were in the little French town, you know, we don't know who bombed it. We don't know when it was bombed. It was just bombed out. You know, Ramel, it's possible that Ramel was bombed out by the Allies or by the Germans, you know, weeks ago. And now that they had this little firefight, so there are more bombs that were dropped on here. I find it hard to believe that this little town was just destroyed right now.
No, and you know, it very well could have been bombed by the Allies, because the Allies did most of the bombing all up and down the coast. We actually released a film about a year and a half ago called The Girl Who Wore Freedom. And The Girl Who Wore Freedom is a documentary about the invasion, about D-Day, told from the side of the French, of the people that lived in those towns. And it's mostly the children of the people that lived in those towns, but some of the older narrators or older participants in the film tell about being woken up as a child and looking out the window and seeing the parachutes. And there's one key scene in the film, this, and it's the girl who wore freedom, who's now grown up, and she's an older woman, and she says her mother said to her, "Look, they've come to save us." And I always thought that was so poignant. There's also other interviews where their family lost their homes, because we bombed the hell out of everything before and during the invasion. So it's really good. It's really good doc. And she, the director, Christian Taylor, this woman, she's obsessed with the invasion. She lives in Illinois. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And she's now making a film about another town. I forget the name of the second town that was affected by the invasion as well.
Oh, wow. Very interesting.
Good lady.
You keep giving me more movies to watch.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Apparently.
That's why God brought me to you.
Apparently. Well, come on. You did tell me that your name means love of God. So, you know. Makes sense.
Christian, by the way, Christian has her own podcast called Documentary First that I've done some guest stints on, where she talks to documentary filmmakers and
stuff. Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I've had one of my guests over the almost every one of my seasons has been a documentary filmmaker also. Do you know Dana Nachman?
I don't.
Okay. She did that Kid Richard Begins.
Oh, what is her name? Dana?
Dana Nachman.
Okay, and I'll do the same with Christian Might. I mean, she's lived this story.
Oh, wow. Okay, why not? I would love to talk to her.
Yeah.
You've given me some good leads in the past. Yeah, so I trusted you. I do. Especially since you know what it means to go through this type of go through a movie this type of way, this way. So, you know, you're only going to recommend it to people to be on it that know how to do these type of things. So that's good.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. My only advice to you is the same advice I've given you since the first time I have talked to you, is do shorter movies.
Why? Why? I don't understand the answer to that. So that's why. Come on.
Because then you could do more. I'm thinking somewhere down the list it's going to be The Brutalist or – you know, Titanic.
First of all, Titanic's already been done. The Brutalist, I really like The Brutalist, but that's not a movie that I would break down minute by minute. You know.
Well, we start talking about The Brutalist, we won't talk about anything else, because I think The Brutalist is an amazing first half of a movie.
I would agree. I would agree. The second half is slower.
Yeah, it falls apart from that for me. But anyway.
Yeah.
But this minute is you know, again, it goes to show how much story you can tell without a whole lot of dialogue. I mean, with impeccable camera work and set design, I mean, you're there. You're you're in this bombed out town. You feel like you're walking right next to these guys.
Yes, for sure. And then Henderson asks the inevitable question. So what are you guys all about? What the hell are you guys doing here? How did you get here to help us?
Yes.
How does someone find themselves in Rommel? Yeah, that's more or less the question. And he goes, well, we're here for him, Ryan. And he points to, that unknown actor, Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And then Ryan pipes up and goes, me, sir? And then he looks at him and he goes, James Francis Ryan of Iowa? And I think it's great the way that this minute ends with him asking that question, because we as the audience know why he's making sure he's got the right James Ryan. Because we know he doesn't want to have to go through the same crap he went through, when he made this mistake with Nathan Fillion. Actually, it was probably about 60 episodes ago. 50. No, they met him in 61, I believe. Episode 61. So it's been 56 episodes since we saw him. Almost an hour. He doesn't have to go through that again. So it's great that this minute will give us that cliffhanger, where he's just wanting to make sure you are James Francis Ryan of Iowa, right? That type of thing.
Yep.
That's the way this minute ends.
Cool.
And did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Nope. No, I think we covered it. I think we covered it pretty good.
Great. Well, we covered a lot of other movies also, but yes.
Yeah, we did. As we tend to do.
Again, that's fine. I like going down rabbit holes. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So, Joe, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
My number five would probably be Big. My number four would be this movie, Ryan. My number three would be so tough. Again, you got the two biggies that are going to be one and two. Would probably be The Road to
Perdition,
which is a movie that's got great performances, but is not a great movie. I put it on parallel with Green Mile. Great performances, but not a great movie. But the performances performing this movie
shine. I actually love The Green Mile.
And then
actually love The Green Mile. But if I decide to do it, I want to invite you.
Okay. All right. And then one and two, I mean, number two's got to be, it's either Gump or Philadelphia. You just switch him anytime you want. He's in Gump. Gump is the more watchable film. Gump is one of those ones that when you are scanning your channels and it's on, you watch it. Philadelphia, not so much. So I would go Philadelphia number two and Gump number one.
All right. That is great. Okay, so Joe, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yes, my company's website is virgilfilms.com. We are a distribution company. My email, if you ever want to reach me, is joe@virgilfilmsent.com. And other than that, you contact Rob and he'll contact me.
That's the way to do it. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to moviearoundminute@rob.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Tally-ho! In my solitude.